سلام کعبه دلها حسین جان، سلام شمع ما فلها حسین جانم،
حسین جانم حسین جانم حسین جان.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. لقد كرمنا بني آدم وحملناه على البر والبحر. صدق الله العلي العظيم. صلى الله على محمد وعلى محمد. In the very beginning, I would like to extend a condemnation to the events that unfolded in Paris today. It is quite shocking to really see this loss of life, loss of innocent life. Other than that, the same thing happened in Baghdad. There was a bombing in Baghdad as well. 20 odd people were killed. It is quite unfortunate to see these atrocities against innocent people. One thing is for sure, wherever there is a loss of life, an innocent life, wherever there is a loss of innocent life, the loss is of Islam, because Islam is a deen of insaniyat, of humanity. And wherever a person is killed, his life is wasted, then obviously Islam suffers, you know, because as Allah says that the greatest enemy of insan is shaitan. So shaitan, he would like somewhere or the other to take the life of man, and doesn't allow him to have an opportunity where he could invest or investigate in Iman, for example, if they're already not on Iman. Or even if they are on Iman, somehow, you know, their life should be terminated so that they cannot provide to the humanity. You know, that's what we see in regards to many of the scholars. That's what we see in regards to many of the mu'mineen whose lives are taken, who are there for a purpose, with a goal. For example, all of these zawar, all of these majalises that we have, and people being killed there. So now we also find that, you know, these crimes still, it's unclear that who and what happened. We also find that these type of crimes end up with the name of Islam, Islamic extremism. That is also a name which is a bad name given to Islam. So you have the loss of life, that innocent life, which itself, you know, is a loss of Islam, loss of humanity. You know, Islam really pays attention to these things, quite important, regardless of their creed, regardless of their belief system, you know, who they are and what they are. But they are insan, they are a human being. And our teachings of our Masumi alayhi salam have always been supportive of humanity. For example, if you look at Abu Abdullah al-Hussein goes to the camp of Wahhab, and although aware that he's a Christian, but he still digs up a well for him. He said, oh, you're not a, you know, as they were in trouble, as she complained of scantity of water, Imam Hussein digged a well, did not say that, oh, if you're a non-Muslim, then I don't really care, right? So humanity, insaniyat is very important in our deen, in our maktab. More so sometimes where a person, where a child might know a surah, right? You might have memorized a chapter of the Quran, or you might know the rules of the prayers. But if you are not respecting your elders, if you are defaming your friend, talking behind her back, behind his back, when your father is coming, you're not getting up to respect him, All of that, what you have memorized is Quran and all that, is of no use, right? If you are not willing to share what you have, you know, you might know a lot of things from the Quran. You might know, you know, the doubts, the shakiyat, or the doubts in prayer and what shall one do. But if you're not taking care of your fellow sister, of your fellow brother, if you're not kind towards him, if you're not taking care of him, you know, that is of no use. You have to think about your friend. You know, you have to think about your brothers and sisters and your seniors, your teachers, your elders. You know, always give that space and room to them. Never be someone who is, you know, always want whatever one decides. You know, that selfishness shouldn't be there. You know, all of the ahkamat, our Quran, our namaz, our fasting, is to become selfless. It's not to become selfish, right? If you have a better spot in a majlis, in a place, you know, give to your, you know, friend who is sitting next to you, right? If you have food in your plate, right? And then perhaps the person or your brother did not get that tabarruk, you know, share your tabarruk with him.
Salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Okay? So it's quite important. Salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Another salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Yeah, it's fine. Okay, now I'm not really talking about what I was planning to speak tonight, because mashallah we have a younger crowd here. So I will tell you a bit about the historical events that took place during the life of the fourth Imam, because it's very important. So if all of our young ones here, if they move forward, all of you come closer to me. Come on, come here, come right here. Good, very good. Salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. What is the name of the fourth Imam? Imam Zainul Abidin, but that's the title. What's his name? Ali ibn al... What was his name? Ali, right? So there was, and you know what? Imam Hussein named all of his children, what was their name? Ali. He named them all Ali, right? And what about the daughters? Fatima. He named them all Fatima. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. There was some reason why he named them all Ali. There was some reason why he named them all Fatima, right? Okay? So now let's look at the times of the fourth Imam, how it was. You know, when he went back to Medina after Karbala and then being taken as a captive in Sham, you know what he said? Imagine how many followers did Imam Zainul Abidin had when he went back to Medina. He says there were not more than 20 lovers of Ahl Bayt alayhi salam in Makkah and Medina. There were not more than 20. And look how many we got today. How did it happen? What did he really do in order to promote, in order to teach? No texting there, please. Excuse me. Stop that. All right. Salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Right? So what he did, right? Fourth Imam, 20 followers. Today for Arbaeen, how many people go? 20 million. Yeah? And it was so difficult for the fourth Imam, not just from the point of view of the, you know, very cruel king or the governor who was there at that time. You know, there was an uprising while Imam Zainul Abidin was still in Medina by some of the children of the companions of the Prophet against Yazid. Yazid sent about, you know, Yazid sent his men to Medina when Imam Zainul Abidin was still alive, the fourth Imam. The uprising was called the uprising of Harre. There was the son of the companion of the Prophet who is known as Hanzale, who was given the title of the one who's been given the ghusl by the Malaika. As he died in one of the battles, the Malaika was given the ghusl.
So the governor of Medina sent Hans, the son of Hanzala, and others who were very respectable in Medina, to Yazid in Sham, because Medina was always where there was a sort of like a revolution. People were against the governors appointed by the Khalifas all the time, because Medina was a town of who? Who used to live in Medina? Prophet Muhammad used to live, the Ahlul Bayt used to live. So they were followers of the Prophet. Yeah? Pay attention. Excuse me. Salatu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. They were followers of the Prophet. So the kings were against the Prophet, and they had appointed their ministers, MPs, or whatever you want to call, you know, governors in Medina. So the people were very, they don't like the governors, because they were forcing, taking money, so on and so forth. And the people there, they knew the Ahlul Bayt, they respected the Ahlul Bayt, so they didn't like the governors. So the governor at the time of the fourth Imam, he said, okay, I'm going to send four famous people to Sham, to the Khalifa. So when he goes there, the Khalifa will welcome him, the Khalifa will give him money, he will sort of like buy them out, because they were giving trouble, you know, to the governor. So they went to Yazid's palace, and they were shocked. They were shocked to see Yazid dancing with, playing with dogs, with monkeys, you know, women singing there, dancing, drinking openly, and he's known as the Khalifa, he's known as the king, Muslim king, so to speak, if you know what Khalifa means. You know, he's like the Imam of all of the Muslims, right? But he's drinking, he's watching women dancing, people are singing in his palace. So here you have four people who are respectable, who likes religion. They came to Syria, sent by the governor of Syria, in order to gain support for him in Medina, and they got really upset. They were in shock. What's going on? And they said, we got to do something about it. Yazid gave them a lot of money, a lot of gifts they did not take, because they say, if we take gifts, then we will be obliged to be kind. So we say, we will not take. They came back to Medina now. When they came back to Medina, they gathered people, they spoke to people, and they said, you know, we got to do something about it. They started an uprising against the Khalifa of the time, who was the Yazid. And Yazid got really upset, and he sent a lot of men, a lot of army, to really crush the uprising in Medina. 4,000 to 5,000 people in Medina were killed. And the house of Imam Zainul Abidin was safe haven, was like a house where everybody took refuge to protect their life. Imam Zainul Abidin protected them. So what does this mean? This means that Imam Zainul Abidin did not support the uprising, right? Because Imam Zainul Abidin knew that they will be crushed, they will be killed, because he himself has said there are only 20 true followers. There could be 4,000. On the other hand, these men, they never consulted the Imam. Shall we really do the uprising? Shall we not do the uprising? What shall we do? You know, can you guide us? They did not speak to the fourth Imam, right? Because Imam is the authority, right? Whatever Imam says, right, is the authority. So the uprising was crushed. So you have this type of oppression taking place during the time of the fourth Imam. Then after that comes, you know, another Khalifa after Yazid, after they defeated Zubair, you know, he also appointed Hajjaj bin Yusuf, who becomes the governor of Medina. You know, when he died, there were about 50,000 men in his prison, 30,000 women, and 16,000 men and women in one prison. You know, this is history, but they were put in the prison with no clothes. This is how cruel this man was. During the time of the fourth Imam, they were, whoever name was Ali, Hussein, they would massacre and kill them, right? That's how he was. Look where our Islam, our Tashayyo, our Shia school, our Majlis Matam have reached. Who really did that? They suffered so much, and they brought us here. And what are we doing? Are we really fulfilling our responsibility to our religion, to our deen, to our Islam? Right? They suffered so much to really protect. It was so difficult for them to really practice their faith. Right? And they brought it here to us. In Mecca and Medina, mixed gatherings started, men and women together. This was something new. Men and women together, even the scholars who were there at that time, they used to attend these majalises. Clapping, dancing, whistling, singers, ladies used to sing. There was a lady, her name was called Jamila. She goes for Hajj from Medina. She used to live in Medina. She was a very famous singer. You know, everybody liked her in Medina. You know, she used to sing very good apparently, right? And then she wanted to go to Hajj. So she goes to Hajj to a lot of people to say Khuda Hafizi. You know, to part her farewell, they all came and clapping it. So mashallah, she goes for Hajj, you know. It's not that she's not going for Hajj, you know, she also believes in it. You know, we have to look at ourselves as well. We also believe in a lot of things. You know, we also believe in Imam Hussein, we also believe. But when it comes to mixed gathering, wedding happens, we say, oh, we want to have, it's not possible to divide men and women. It doesn't look nice, that's backward, right? You know, we will have mixed gathering, you know, women, men and women sitting together. But at the same time, we also believe. This Jamila Khatun, you know, this Jamila, this lady Jamila also believes. She also went for Hajj, right? She went for Hajj, oh, from Makkah, a lot of people came. She did Hajj, everybody, when she was going back, for welcoming her, a lot of people came to welcome her as well. People were really, you know, sort of like moved by her voice, by her, you know, by herself. So this is Makkah and Medina we are talking about. And there are many singers whose name are mentioned in the history that I don't remember the name, but this name kind of stuck because it's a simple name, easy name, right? So there were people dancing, clapping. This is the culture, the Muslim culture at the time of Imam Zainul Abidin. This is how it was. And this is not in Egypt. This is not in Syria. We are talking about this is in Mecca and Medina, where Islam, it was the bed of Islam. Medina is the house of the Prophet, the shrine of the Prophet. Mecca is the house of God. In these places, people are like this. People are welcoming the singers, enjoying and entertaining and mixed gathering taking place. This is the time of the fourth Imam. This is the culture of Muslims at that time. Anas bin Malik, one of the Sahabi of Rasul, he says that if Rasul comes now, he will not recognize Muslims and their practices. Then the man asked, what about Salat? He said, what have you brought on the head of Salat? And upon Salat, you think he will recognize the Salat? That means the prayer, the Muslims pray 5 times a day. This is the time of Imam Zainul Abidin. Even the prayer was not right. Even the prayer was not right. Why do you think Imam Hussain did that uprising? Why did he went and fight with Yazid? You know, he says, Amar bil, you know, to Amar bil Ma'ruf, right? Nahi anil Munkar, to revive the Sunnah of the Prophet, of my father, all of that was going on. And then he sacrificed, he was killed, he was massacred, he was butchered. And then Imam Zainul Abidin is saying, only 20 are there who are followers of true Qur'an, of the Qur'an, of the true Islam, only 20. And some of them, they write the names of the Sahabis that were there, 5, not more than that. Only 5 people. Look how Imam Zainul Abidin did. This is from the point of view of the zulm, oppression, how cruel the governors were and how they were punishing, right? How scared the people were. From the point of view of the culture, the Muslim culture, the Islamic values, what they followed, what they practiced, whether that be their prayers, whether that be their Hajj, you know, this is how Muslims were at that time. Now, in regards to the fabrication of traditions that was taking place, one salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
Only you will recite salawat loudly, these young ones here. Salawat. One more salawat. Okay, one last story now, and then probably we'll look at some of the topic that we want to do, and very important. There was a man named called Zohri. What was his name? Zohri, yes. He was very pious, always in the masjid of the Prophet, all the time. He was very knowledgeable as well. What was his name? Zohri, right. And then always praying, always in the masjid, very spiritual guy, right? So Zohri, he kind of told off a person. You know, he did something wrong, he told him off. So this man who got told off, he got so upset, you know, he died. Now Zohri said, oh, it is because of me he died. So he left the masjid and everything, he went into the jungle, in the desert. And he was living there, seeking forgiveness of Allah. He was very upset because, you know, as he was a very spiritual and nice man, right? All the time in the masjid. What was his name? Right. So then what happens is that Imam Zainul Abidin was found out and he was passing by. He said, oh Zohri, what are you doing? Why are you burdening yourself so much? If you think that it is because of you, why don't you pay the blood money to the family? And then Allah will forgive. Then Zohri said, wow, I never thought of that. So finally he pays the blood money, he comes back into the market or he comes back into the regular life and he was carrying on his teaching and learning and all that to the point where the Syrians, where the Khalifa invited him to become, to be the part of the ministry, because the kings, they used to have scholars in the ministry all the time. They were called advisors. You know, religious advisors. Even today, the president here, they have a religious advisor, you know, Islamic advisor in different fields, they advise them, right? So here comes Zohri, who? Right, Zohri. Comes to Sham and becomes a part of the team of Bani Umayyah. And then the fabrication of Hadith started. Which period we are talking about? Which Imam? Yeah, Imam Sajjad, fourth Imam period. So you knew already how the culture was, right? You knew already how the oppression and how cruel the governors and all those were, right? You knew already how the people were practicing their deen, yeah? Now let's look at this fabrication. Fabrication means that lies, false hadith they write. You know, false hadith. Like for example, there's a hadith of the Prophet, you know what it says? The hadith of the Prophet says that when you travel, when you go out of the house, you should go to three masjid. That should be the purpose of travel. Two hadith. It says either you should go to Masjid al-Nabawi, or you should go to Masjid al-Haram, or you should go to Masjid al-Aqsa. Where is Masjid al-Aqsa? Masjid al-Aqsa is where? Iraq. Masjid al-Aqsa, Jerusalem. And you know what happened in Masjid al-Aqsa, right? What? Huh? No, at the time of the Prophet. Prophet was taken to Mi'raj. What, you know what Mi'raj means, right? He went to the heaven. Yeah. So he went from Medina to Makkah and from there to Masjid al-Aqsa, the Dome Rock. Right? From there he went to the heaven. Right? So three masjid. One is Masjid al-Nabawi, the Prophet says. The other is Masjid al-Haram. And the third is Masjid al, where is that? In Masjid al-Aqsa is where? In Jerusalem. Right, right. So very famous masjid, very important masjid. Yeah? So here, Zohri, who? Right. Who was in the cabinet of Bani Umayyah. He adds, you know what he adds? He says that the status, the maqam or the station of Masjid al-Aqsa and Masjid al-Haram is the same. He adds this. There's this hadith, which is go out for three masjid from the Prophet. Then he adds this. You know why he adds it? Because Masjid al-Aqsa, which is in Jerusalem, was under the reign of the Bani Umayyah. And Makkah was under the reign of Abdullah ibn Zubayr. There were two khilafas going on at that time. There were two khalifas ruling the Islamic world. They were fighting with each other. One was called Abdullah ibn Zubayr, who was the son of Zubayr. Zubayr was one of the companions of the Prophet. Right? And his son claimed himself to be the Khalifa, and he was ruling in Makkah. And there was another Khalifa in Sham, Malik ibn Marwan. And then he, apparently, if I'm not mistaken the name, from the Bani Umayyah, he was ruling in Syria, in Sham. So now, Zuhri in the ministry of Bani Umayyah, if the people from Syria, if they want to go to Hajj, where do they have to go for Hajj? Which masjid? Masjidul Haram. And that is under whose kingship? Abdullah ibn Zubayr. So people will be traveling from Syria to Makkah, and Abdullah ibn Zubayr will do his propagation, his tabligh or whatever, right? So it's better to add something to this hadith, and that is the level or the status of the Masjid al-Aqsa is equivalent to Masjid al-Haram. So the Syrians, so the people who are under the rule of Bani Umayyah, they will not travel to Makkah, but rather they will go to Jerusalem. And he made something very special in that masjid, like Kaaba, so that people, instead of going for Hajj there, they will go here. See how? So Zuhri, what was his name, that scholar? And then Imam Zainul Abidin. And then I have many hadiths. This is just one example. For example, he gave a hadith from the wife of the Prophet, saying that the wife of the Prophet once saw Abdullah ibn Abbas and Amirul Mu'mineen, Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. He saw these things. He saw these two men, and the Prophet said, na'uzu billah, that these two men will die out of deen. Who will die out of deen? Out of deen men, they will not be Muslim. Who wrote this hadith? What was his name? Zuhri. Right. And then Imam Zainul Abidin wrote like a 3 or 4 page letter to him. Look, from where? He was like a pious man in the Masjid al-Nabawi, right? Scholar. He was got upset because of one statement that he gave. And look what he was doing. And where he ended up. You know, he was bought, right, by the Khalifa, by the Bani Umayyas, right? So one salawat for all of you young ones here, all of you together, Allahumma salli. So the fourth Imam period was very difficult. This is how the period was, and look how he kind of transfer the knowledge, Islam and Quran, you know, through his teachings. And one of his famous works that we have is what? Anybody here? Famous book that is from the fourth Imam. Saif-e-Sajjadiyah. What is Saif-e-Sajjadiyah? Book from the fourth Imam, but what is it in it? Like a history book? Or no? What is it? It's a book of du'as. Very good. One salawat for my brother here. So the fourth Imam, all of you here, look at me. Here, everybody. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. So the fourth Imam, through du'as, he taught everybody what was going on. Through du'as, he taught them what tawheed means. People have lost the meaning of Tawheed. Through du'as, he taught the importance of Nabuwat and the Prophet. Through du'as, he taught the value of parents. Through du'as, he taught the value of children and the importance of children. Through du'as, he taught the value of Friday, of Eid prayer, of Islamic, you know, akhlaq and etiquettes. So the du'as contain these things within it, but at the same time, these are the du'as of Imam Sajjad, which has its own power. You know, he connected to God. So this means that du'a is a very powerful tool that we have, that could change. Where 20 people, where you have millions and millions of people today, believing in Tawheed, believing in that message of Imamat. You know, Imamat, Tawheed, Nabuwat, Qiyamat, these are very deep, you know, philosophical realities, right?
It requires a lot of knowledge for a person to really believe in the same way, or at least in the way that we should believe. The Quran wants us to believe, the Ahlul Bayt wants us to believe. Right? And Imam Zainwari transferred that. Abu Hamza al-Sumali, one of the companion of the fourth Imam, you know, the dua that we have, that we recite in the month of Ramadan, in that amazing knowledge of Tawheed, right? So he transferred that. Today, the duas of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam are the foundation of Islamic philosophy, foundation of Islamic mysticism and irfan. You know, people write 2-3 volumes of book, but Imam Zainul Abidin, in 1 and 2 sentences, he explained everything. You know. So the knowledge as well, at the same time, pointing out to that how powerful the dua could be. So we always have to. Maybe we don't have that knowledge, but in any way possible, we should ask Allah all the time, in our own language, to really protect us. We don't know where we will end up. You know, once Zuhri in that side, and all of a sudden he ended up somewhere else. So we always have to ask Allah that Allah protect us, protect our iman, right? Protect our children. You know, we always continuously in our life, we should ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for that protection. Salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The topic we wanted to discuss for 3 nights was to look at the phenomena of honor, which is karamat. As Allah says in the Quran, لَقَدْ كَرَّمْنَا بَنِي آدَمْ, that Allah have honored Bani Adam. The children of Adam have been honored by God. What does really karamna means? What does karamat means? Number one. Number two, we also wanted to look at the phenomena of a dignity, which is known as izzat. Al-izzatu lillah wa li rasulihi wa lil mu'mineen. Is there a difference in honor and dignity? Because they both sounds the same, you know, honor and also dignity as well, right? Now, while looking at these two realities on the basis of the Quran and Sunnah, and also on a metaphysical level, which doesn't really require a person to believe in the Quran and Hadith to really believe these realities exist and they are true and they are real. You know, any person who is a non-Muslim would say, oh, well, it makes sense, right? So it becomes a basis of our discussion with someone who is a non-Muslim. You know, it becomes a basis of an argument, in the sense that the philosophical argument, not argument like that, you know. So, now, honor and dignity, and what's their reality? The other thing that we want to see is what forms the basis, the foundation of these two realities. And that is considered as self-recognition. Self-recognition is essential to human beings. Not only just human beings, it's essential to every created thing, and it cannot be other than that. I'm going to mention a very deep, mystical, irfani principle here. And that is, everything that is created is nothing but the reflection of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala himself, right? Because these are the product. So the product must resemble the one who have produced that. You know, it has to be there. It just can't be other than that, right? You know, the gadgets that we have is that mind that is in there, you know, that of that person who have created that thing. So Allah is the creator of everything. So whatsoever Allah has created, you will find the reflection of the divine within it. You'll find the reflection of the divine within it. For example, what we said, the self-recognition, it is a reality and it is a fact. It doesn't need a Muslim to really believe in that. It doesn't really need someone who believes in the Quran or, you know, in the Hadith, that they will say that, yes, self-recognition is something. You know, it must be there because the Quran is saying or the Hadith is saying. Because it is essential to every creation.
You know, why is there a difference in stones? Some stones are aqiq, some stones are diamonds, some are, right? There's something within it that allows them, that allows them to be self-recognized. There's some sort of tasqiyah, if you want to call it, from the Islamic, you know, in Islamic terminology, purification or whatever, you know. So that means that even the things that are there, they have some dim or some sort of will within themselves, everything, right? Animals, you know, animals like to be self-recognized. Many of us have cat as a pet, right? You know, about a few years ago I spoke about cat as well, you know. And as we know, the rulings of the cat as well, so we got to be very careful. You know, the hair, according to some of the marajis, is batil. Salat is not salat, right? Excessive hair, Agha Sistani says, you know, is batil, but one or two he probably overlooks that. But there's something about it, right? Just like gelatin. You know, there's something about it, just avoid it, Baba. You know, big deal, right? So here, cat's hair, right? Cat, animal. What I was, the example I wanted to give was self-recognition. The cat will not, you know, these cats here are trained. They are not like, you know, India, Pakistan, ke billiyan ja ke chuhe mare waisa, right? You know, they are not that, right? And have fun with the rats and eat it, you know? They go kill, they hunt the squirrel or whatever they find in the garden and then bring it and put it at your doorstep. They will not eat it. You just put it there, like to be self-recognized. So even the animals have that. They like to be self-recognized. Obviously, insan, which is a bigger haiwan, you know, obviously, you know, than cat. So there's more of that in him. But where does this all come from? Because we are the product. Product of what? Product of God. And God says, Kuntu kanzan makhfiya. I was a hidden treasure and I like to be recognized. So I created. So everything that God has created reflects Allah, right? You know, the things that we are looking around, they all, if we say they are 99 asma, they are more than that. Everything that is there contains these asma in different dimensions, in different sort of quality and in its intensity. That's the right word, intensity. You know, they all have all of those asma in different intensities, you see? So self-recognition is something there. Within the nature of man, he likes to be recognized. Now the point becomes here that how he wants to be self-recognized or what methodology he utilizes to be self-recognized. Is it the methodology or it is the way that will bring about izzat, dignity, or is it the way that will bring about disgrace, which is zillat, right? You know, that's the point. Self-recognition is natural and it has to be there and we all got that. But the point is how we acquire that. You know, through izzat or through zillat. You know, just like, you know, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, as we're talking about the du'as of Imam Sajjad. Now Sajjad in the Munajat-e-Shaqeen, you know, the Munajat of the fourth Imam called Munajat-e-Shaqeen, he's complaining to God. Oh God, you know, this is how you made me. You know, I love entertainment. Who doesn't like entertainment? We all want entertainment, right? I mean, this is how Allah made us. Whether that be a 90-year-old, he loves entertainment. You know, he's booking his tickets in Brazil for Olympics right now online. You would find them. 90-year-old Baba, you're in there, ring and they ring. I love it. I want to go, you know, right? Everybody likes entertainment. There is no doubt about it, right? That's how Allah made us. So in Munajat-e-Shaqeen, Imam Sajjad is complaining. You know, this Munajat-e-Shaqeen is a thorough explanation of how a human soul is, or how, you know, what is the psyche, what is the psychology of insan. In Munajat-e-Shaqeen, the Imam Sajjad says, "Ashku ilayka nafsi." You know, he's saying, oh, I complain of the nafs, of my soul. Inna nafsa ammarata bisu. Oh Allah, my nafs commands me to do evil. Allah, that's how you made me. It commands me to do evil. That's how my nafs is, right? But at the same time, He said, Illa ma rahima rabbi. Except that nafs upon which Allah have mercy. So that's why we should always ask Allah for mercy. You know, we might be a scholar, we might be a Shia, we might be a lover, whatever, but nafs amara bisu. This rahima rabbi has to be there. No matter who we are. That Alame Baura, right? That scholar who knew the Ismi Azam, he went against Hazrat Musa, right? He was a scholar who knew Ismi Azam. But what did he ended up with? Because Inna Nafsa Marada Bisu. Illa ma rahima rabbi. That rahima rabbi has to be there in our life. In whatsoever way we can, we should be connected to God. Right? Right? With du'as, with our own way, you know, other than those wajibat that are there. So here, the nafs have that quality in it. That self-recognition is in the nafs. You know, greed is one of the nafsani quality. We all are greedy. And it has to be there. Jesus complains to God, Oh Allah, why did you put this in man? You know, take it away. So Allah says, okay, I do. And then he takes away the greed. And there was a farmer working in the field. And then as soon as Allah takes the greed away from insan, he leaves everything, he went back and relaxed. This is what will happen, right? That has to be there. These qualities that insan have, which is natural and must be there, you know, for a higher purpose. It should be channeled. You know, it needs to be channeled, right? So this self-recognition is something that is in every soul. And it is good and it must be there. And that should be acquired either through izzat or through disgrace. Like for example, all of these serial killers or all of these people who are perverted and mental issues, they like to be self-recognized. And that's why they do it. You know, that's what they want. They like to be self-recognized. They are doing that for that purpose, right? But they have taken the wrong route. The route that they have taken is wrong. That's instead of bringing dignity, it's bringing disgrace to them. A child does great in his exams and the school gives him a watch as a gratitude, you know, as a reward. Whatever expensive watch he gives, Omega, Rolex or whatever. He wears it. Another child gets the same thing. It's the same thing. He steals his na'uzubillah, right? And he wears it. But one is izzat, the other is disgrace. Right? In terms of the quality, in terms of the material, is the same thing. That self-recognition or whatever, that is there. But the point is izzat and zillat, right? One wears it with izzat, which is bringing izzat, the other is bringing zillat, you know? Because of the route that they have taken, you see? So therefore, this quality of self-recognition is very natural to insan and it is there. But the point is the methodology and how one acquires it. If you look at in the plain of Karbala, or not only, prior to that I'll mention it, not only the izzat belongs to a person, but the action that is carried out by that person. The Qiyam of Imam Hussein, there's so much izzat. There's so much dignity of that qiyam that cannot be, you know, hampered, that cannot be sort of restricted. It's always there and it's eternal. Many tries to, you know, change the route of that izzat, of that dignity. Liberalists, they try to use the same message of Imam Hussein or the communists or so on and so forth. But that izzat remained because God protects that izzat. Al-izzatu lillah wa li rasulihi wa lil mu'mineen. That is there and eternal and it will be there forever. Because they have taken that route of dignity. That's why Imam Hussain says, death to me, you know, is better than the life of zillat, you know, than the life of disgrace. And let me tell you one more thing here. And that is, izzat, dignity, you know, becomes the basis, foundation of tarbiyah. Of training, of teaching. Zillat, disgrace, becomes the source of all evil. When a person reaches to that level of disgrace, anything is expected from him. No. Yes, that is why with our children, when we are dealing with them, when we are teaching them, we have to show them the dignity. We have to give them the izzat. And once you give that izzat, they learn, they acquire, right? They increase, they will listen to you. And disgrace, you know, that zillat becomes the source of all evil. So we could see that in, you know, when we compare that to Karbala as well. You have the awj, or the perfection of kamal, of izzat. At the same time, you have the, you know, the lowest or the most disgraced individuals or people, or the form of disgrace, the reality of disgrace is manifested or seen in the plane of Karbala. That is why, this is on a sort of like a more of a moralistic level, there's a higher level to it. That is why the Imams have said, La yawmuka yawmuka Aba Abdullah. There is no day like the day of Aba Abdullah. That was unique and special day that you know, never happened in the past, perhaps never will happen. You know, there isn't any day like the day of Aba Abdullah al-Hussein. You know, because that day you see the awj, the perfection of all good, the kamal, the perfection to the ultimate. And at the same time, you see the perfection of all evil. You know, full of perfection on one side, which is Imam Hussein and the companions, and complete darkness, complete nur on one side, and complete darkness on the other side. And eventually teaching us that the nur is always victorious. See? Right? Yeah, so that day can never. So it's the same is that if we want to take it on a lower level, you know, in terms that's from the higher level of asma and all that. But on a lower level, izzat and zillat, you would find the same thing. Now, if you help me with the salawat, we'll try to look into. I'll just introduce and point out to the difference, and then we'll try to discuss a bit more tomorrow and day after, with the help of the sermon of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, where he gave after Maghribain prayers on the eve of Ashura. Karamat, laqad karramna bani Adam. Allah says that I have honored bani Adam. Honor, karamat is free. Did we do anything to be a Shia, to be a lover of Ahlul Bayt? Right? Did we do anything to be a human being? Or insan, did we do anything? Definitely being a human being an honor, or being a cat is an honor. Human being is an honor, right? I mean, if you look at in the chain of creation, right? Unless there are some people who said, I wish I was a goat, you know, that is something else, you know. So here, if you look at the chain of creation, you would find only insan have become the focus of sajda other than Allah. No malak, no angel who is much greater, one would say, for instance, you know, although Ashraful Makhluqat is insan, but in terms of that spirituality, right? That spirit, that aql, that intellect, pure intellect, but they haven't become the focus of sajda. It was only human being who became the focus of sajda other than God. Even in the case of Hazrat Yusuf, it was an insan. It was not someone, a malak, that you do sajda. All of the malaika were asked. Everyone were asked to do the sajda. This is an honor. So being an insan, laqad karramna bani Adam, being an insan is an honor. And we, you and I, haven't done anything to have this honor. The love of Imam Hussain, that we haven't really done anything, to be honest. But somehow the love has been placed in us. So karamat, honor, is given out for free from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. One doesn't really do anything. Now, izzat is something that we gain by fulfilling our responsibility to honor. If we fulfill our responsibility to Imam Hussein, we will gain izzat. The love of Hussein is placed in us. We have been made insan. لَقَدْ كَرَّمْنَاهُ بَنِي آدَمُ وَحَمَلْنَاهُ عَلَى الْبِرِّ وَالْبَحَرِ. We have favored Bani Adam and we have carried him upon earth and sea. Allah gave aql to insan, by which he constructed an ark, or by which he dwell on this earth. by extracting, by living, right? That akal that have been given for karamat, you know, it's an honor given, right? Now the point is, if that Bani Adam is using this akal to by extracting what is required of this earth so that they could have izzat, so that they could live happily, comfortably, and while doing so, he is fulfilling his responsibility towards being an insan by taking care of the environment. If not, he is, you know, dumping his waste in the sea. That is bringing what? Zillat. That is not honor. That is zillat. No matter how expensive a suit he wear, he may be the CEO of a company, but if he is not fulfilling his responsibility to the honor given by God, that is bringing zillat. Maybe he has some izzat here, 50 years from now, that is zillat for him. You know, he lived his life of zillat. He may be the king of kings, Ramses II, the Pharaoh, right, at this time. But now it's zillat for him, because he hasn't fulfilled his responsibility towards that karamat, towards that honor which was given by God. So karamat, you know, لَقَدْ كَرَّمْنَا بَنِي آدَمَ, that karamat, that honor means that it is something God gives us. But we have to gain the izzat by fulfilling our responsibility towards this karamat given, brings about that izzat, right? And this is seen clearly in the plain of Karbala. If you look at, Habib was playing with some of his children, with his friends, right? And the Prophet was passing by. Prophet, out of all children, there were many here, right? Out of all, for example, the Prophet picks up one and kisses. And that was Habib. Now, they asked, why Habib, why this child? The Prophet said, he kisses the earth on which Hussein walks. Right? Now, why he does that, we'll probably look at it tomorrow, one another incident of Hazrat Habib, you know, what happened. But out of all that they were there, Prophet picked up Habib. That is honor. There were other children as well. Prophet gave honor to Habib, right? Which was free in a way, but there is something that Prophet saw in Habib. The same way there is something that Allah saw in Adam and made him the place of sajda, but the malaika said no, right? So there wasn't a favoritism here. There was something there, an honor given for some reason. So Habib was picked up and kissed by the Prophet. And Habib said, Labbaik. Habib said labbaik to this honor. Habib fulfilled his responsibility towards this honor that was given. And that brought izzat to Habib. And that izzat which is perpetual. That izzat that is there even till today. So he was honored, but he also fulfilled his responsibility towards this honor which was given to Habib. So thus, you would find that in the plain of Karbala, all of the shuhada, they have gone through these different sort of stages of being honored, and at the same time, you know, they gained that izzat. Many did not join Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Ubaidullah ibn Hura Jofi, where Imam Hussein, he himself went to his camp and he asked for help. He recognized who Imam Hussein was. He accepted everything. And then he said, here's my horse and here's my sword. Me, I will not join you. You know, take my horse, it runs very fast, it will help you in the battle, and take my sword. But Ubaidullah did not join. But there were many others who really joined Imam Hussein alayhi salam. The honor which was given by Imam Hussein honored Ubaidullah by coming to his camp. That is an honor, the son of Fatima coming to your camp. And then, what was his response? The son of Fatima went to the camp of Wahab, who was a Christian. And then he goes there and he asks, oh mother, is there anything that is troubling you? She says, you know, after a conversation that is recorded, she says, you know, things are going fine, only if there was water. You know, we don't have a well in this desert. And then Imam Hussain strikes his spear and fountain of water comes, fresh water. And then she says, who are you? He says, I am the grandson of the Prophet who came in Makkah, that you might know of. And the days are so that we came out, we left Medina, we were forced to leave Medina, and we are going towards Kufa. And my message, is there anything that we could do? Imam Hussain says, come and join and help me. You know, I'm in need of helpers. The son of Fatima needs helpers. Wahab returns, saw the well right next to the tent. He was shocked. What happened? Who did this? The mother says, this is what happened. When you went, he said he is the grandson of the last prophet, and he did this. How did he look like? He looked like Isa Masih. He looked like Jesus Christ. That's how Nurani he was. That's how humble he was. That's how I felt. I felt so spiritual. I felt so good with him in his presence. What did he say? He said that he is in need of helpers. He will be surrounded by the enemies. So Wahab says, oh mother, what are you? The mother asks, what is your intent, oh Wahab? Wahab says that, what is my intent? I am going there to help him, oh mother. He came and he honored us. He provided us with the thing that we were looking for. We really wanted, that we wanted to have a well. It is a commodity. But in return, Wahab says that I will say labbaik to what you have given. No wonder the ashab of Imam Hussain, they said, oh Hussain, if they butcher us, if they severed our heads, and if they burn us, and they bring us back to life, we will be sacrificing for you, oh Hussain. There was not one Hussain who sacrificed his life in the plain of Karbala, but there were 72 Hussain. They were all become one with Hussein. Indeed, tonight is that night, no doubt, where the fourth Imam says that sacrifice is our honor. But to see women and children in the marketplaces where people are throwing stones, where people are mocking, where people are making fun of women and children, that is not something that we deserve. We are the children of the last prophet. We are the Ahl Bayt. An old man moves forward in the bazaar of Syria and he started to curse. Then Imam recites the Quran and he asks, have you recited Innama Yuridullah? He said, yes. Do you know who this ayah is for? It belongs to the Tathir, the one, the purified one. Do you know who they are? We are the one. Then Imam recites the ayah of the Quran, of the Dhil Qurba. Do you know who are the Dhil Qurba? We are the Dhil Qurba. Do you know the ayah of Dhil Qurba where Khums is specially for them? That's the third verse he recites. He says, we are the Dhil Qurba. The old man says that, are you really? Yes, and that is the head of the grandson of Rasulullah. That is the head of Hussein. And here he says, is there a possibility that I do Tawbah? Imam Sajjad says, yes, you can do Tawbah. The news reaches Yazid. And when Yazid finds out that this old man have cried and have done Tawbah, he was prosecuted. He was killed and he was slain and he becomes Shaheed. And the dua of Imam Sajjad, he says, yes, your Tawbah will be Qabool and you will be one with us. Your Hashr will be with us. And he attained that Shahadat. Then you have Sa'id ibn Sahal, or Sahal ibn Sa'id, who returns to Syria. And he says, is there a feast today that I don't know? Then they said, yes, the rebels have returned. The heads of the rebels are brought in Syria. That is why we are decorating the whole city. And all of a sudden he says that while I was speaking to this man, and I saw heads coming towards the town through the door of clock, they call the Babu Sa'd. And then when I saw the head, I saw a very young, beautiful head, which seems like to be smiling. When I moved further, and they said that this is Abbas ibn Ali. Then behind that, I saw another head, because Sahal was the one who claims or who was respected because he saw the Prophet. So he says, then I saw the head, which looked the most resemble
to Rasulullah, who is this? This is Ali al-Akbar. Then after that, there's the head of Hussein, where he says, this is Hussein ibn Ali. This is the grandson of the Prophet. And then he saw an old man chained, and he moves towards him. He says, Ali ibn al-Hussein. And here he says to Sahal, he introduces himself, I have seen your grandfather. I have seen your great-grandfather, Rasulullah. And Imam Zain al-Abidin requests, oh Sahal, I request you, oh man, I request you that will you ask this man to take the heads of the shuhada far away from the ladies, because everybody is looking towards the head, and women and children are there without chador and without hijab. And Sahal goes, pays about 100 dinar to this man to move forward, but that wasn't granted. The ladies in the middle of the marketplace of Sham, everyone is looking, them without hijab. Allah الله على قوم الظالمين سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون
سلام كعبية دلها حسن جان سلام شام إما فلها حسن جان
حسن جان حسن جانم حسین جان حسین جانم حسین جانم حسین جانم
سلام ای باب رحمت باب جنت سلام ای باب رحمت باب جنت سلام ای رهبر والا حسین سلام ای میوه قلب پیامبر سلام ای میوه قلب پیامبر سلام ای زاده زهرا حسین جانم
حسین جانم حسین جانم حسین جان حسین جانم حسین جانم حسین جانم
همیشه بلبم نام تو باشم همیشه بلبم نام تو باشم همی گویم که ای مولا حسین جانم قامت را از دل و جان میپذیرم قامت را از دل و جان میپذیرم کنم برپا از آیت را حسین جانم
حسین جانم حسین جانم حسین جان حسین جانم حسین جانم حسین جانم
سلام کعبه دلها حسین جان سلام کعبه دلها حسین جان سلام شمع من فلها حسین جانم
حسین جانم حسین جانم حسین جان حسین جانم حسین جانم حسین جان
سلام ای باب رحمت باب جنم سلام ای باب رحمت باب جنم سلام ای رهبر والا حسین جانم سلام ای میوه قلب
حسین جانم حسین جانم حسین جان حسین جانم حسین جانم حسین جان
همیشه بلبم نام تو باشه
Jonam Hussain, 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 Jonam Hussain,